Blog Talk Radio.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism Speaks, it's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and I want to thank you so much for joining me. We're going to be talking in the second half with Carlene Bryce. She's the author of Orange, Mint, and Honey, and was an Essence recommended read and a Target bookmarked breakout book. For this book, she won the 2009 First Novelist Award from the Black Caucus of the American Library Association and the 2008 Breakout Author Award at the African American Literary Awards Show. Orange, Mint, and Honey was made into the movie Sins of the Mother on the Lifetime Movie Network. She also has a second novel called Children of the Waters, and she's working on her third novel, Calling Every Good Wish Home. And I believe she's on the switchboard right now. I want to bring her in. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Hi, Carlene. Thank you so much for joining the show this morning.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Wow, I just love your book, Orange, Mint, and Honey. I mean, there's so many issues in your book. You're talking about forgiveness and grief, secrets, trust, betrayal. Also, I find interesting, your book is dealing with alcohol addiction, and this month is Alcohol Addiction Awareness Month.
So good timing.
Yes, excellent timing. One of the things you do talk about was the issue of forgiveness in this book. What are some things you think you had to forgive in your life?
Oh, boy. Lots of things and things I'm still working on. But the story in the book is about a daughter who has to figure out if she can forgive her mother for her mother's drinking when she was young. And neither of my parents are alcoholics, but my parents were very young when they had me and my brothers. They divorced when we were young. And so there were a few issues that I needed to forgive my parents for, and a lot of other things I've had to ask for forgiveness for my, you know, things I've done wrong to hurt other people too. So
definitely, we're all working on that. I mean, none of us are perfect. So,
That's right. They say,
don't throw the stone, the first stone, you know.
Right.
So, how did you get started in writing? Let's start back to the beginning. Did you write a lot when you were a child? Were you reading books a lot? How did you get started?
Yeah, I think most writers are readers, and I was definitely a born reader. When I was a little girl, I read a lot, and I also wrote stories, and even when I wasn't writing stories, I was always making up things, and I remember telling neighborhood friends of mine just all kind of things. You know, we would be sitting outside, and somebody would say something about, you know, well, I wonder why the birds do this, and I would just start on this thing like I knew all about it. I would just be
okay.
So, yeah, writers are kind of, fiction writers are kind of natural liars, maybe. I don't know, but we're storytellers, right?
Yeah, you're storytellers. And you must be into music, because in this book, Orange, Mint, and Honey, there's a lot of music. I mean, you talk about Nina Simone, you're talking about jazz, you start talking about African music, hip hop. Are you a music lover? Do you have like 10,000 songs on your iPod? What's the deal?
Yeah, I am a music lover, and a lot of that came from my family. My grandfather, who passed away just a few years ago, was a very, very well-known music collector. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and that's where he lived, and he had a very renowned music collection. So I grew up around that, and then when I got married, I married a musician, so yes, music is very important to me.
Well, I just want to say that the story was great, and now you talk about your imagination. There was a scene in there, you were talking about the garden. The mother, who's one of the main characters in her book, uses gardening as kind of therapy, and I just felt like I was standing in the garden, the way you were describing the flowers and the way she organized it. Sometimes you walk past the garden, it looks kind of chaotic, but in the story, it was brought out that the daughter was just sitting back one day looking at the garden. Do you are you a gardener, or is that just something that you saw around you?
I am a gardener, actually. I do garden, and that's where a lot of the information in the book came from. there's sometimes a method to the madness, and if you can kind of sit like Shay did in the story and look, you kind of notice patterns of colors and shapes and heights and stuff like that. So yeah, that came from real life. But I'm glad it made you feel like you were there.
Well, definitely. Well, I'm also an actress, so I like the different dialogues, the different scenes you have with the characters. And one of the biggest scenes in the book, Aren't Men Honeywell, one of the high points was the fight that the mother and daughter had in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And as a performer, I was like, oh, I want to do this. can I get in church? Can we start filming, you know? So now that brings me to the issue that this book was made into a movie. How did that make you feel?
Oh, it was amazing, and I was actually on set for that scene when they filmed that scene. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just an unreal thing, a totally unreal thing to see, to have written this scene and then see it come to life and people saying the words just like
right.
they were in the book and doing all the things that I had imagined. It was like the movie people were really in my head.
And let's tell people that Jill Scott was one of the main characters in your movie. Did you have any input on picking her, or how was she chosen for the role?
No, I got really lucky. The Lifetime movie people and the producer, I think, did a fabulous job with the casting and everything, and they did all the casting, but I was very pleased with Jill Scott and Nicole Beharie, who plays the daughter Shay.
Now, your second book is Children of the Waters, and you're dealing with these deep issues. I mean, we can't get away from this issue of the secrets. That's something I saw in Orange Mitten Honey, and also the issue of secrets in Children of the Waters. Did you see a lot of secrets in your life? Do you felt there were a lot of things secret? How do you talk to your children about secrets?
Well, I don't have children, actually.
Okay.
But for me, I think it's more of I'm really fascinated by how what we do has consequences that last for a long time. And so that's how I would describe what goes on in both books. You know, things that people make secret choices or commit acts that they keep secret. But really what I'm interested in is the consequences of keeping that secret, of the consequences of committing that act, and how it goes through generations.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's something that I've seen in my family and lots of people's families. I just think that's something that is, it's, you know, it's common. Actions have consequences.
Pervasive. Yeah, definitely pervasive. And I think it's important. Earlier on my other show, I read a PSA about talking to your kids about alcohol, and how it's important to communicate to your children. I'm a parent, and I think it's important to communicate to your children about what's going on in the world. If you don't talk about it, it's not going to go away. You know, it's still there. But also, in terms of as an adult, I did a show in reference to AIDS awareness, and that talking to your friends about certain issues are important also, and maybe going and get tested for AIDS together or sharing things. So because it's not going to go away because you don't talk about the issue, you know?
Exactly.
Let's mention your website. You have your website, CarleneBryce.com. Also, now, this is interesting. I want to mention this. You have a blog, and it's White Readers Meet Black Authors. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I started that blog about a year and a half ago to try to get a wider WIDER readership for black authors, because very often what happens is that books by black authors are only marketed to black people, and I think if it's a good book, it should be open to any reader who might be interested in the topic. So I started the blog and have profiled a whole lot of writers and a whole lot of books. The URL is welcomewhitefolks.blogspot.com, but anybody
yes,
is...
Yes, I did say welcomewhitefolks.blogspot.com, but let you say
yes, I did,
welcome.
But everybody's welcome. That was just a way of, you know, waving the flag and trying to get some attention. But yeah, it's, you know, we have readers of all kinds who come to the blog, and people email me and leave me comments saying they're finding out about books that they are reading and enjoying that they wouldn't have heard about otherwise. So I feel like it's a good mission, and so far it's being successful.
Yes. And now you have one. You're just a very busy woman. Pajama Gardener. PajamaGardenerBlogspot.com. Talk about that.
Well, that's just kind of my little personal space online, and I talk about gardening and reading and writing and just anything going on with me, I kind of joke and say it's where I talk about all the things I do in pajamas, which is writing, gardening, and basically anything.
And now you know, Jeff, what kind of pajamas do you wear? Are you wearing shorts or long pants, T-shirts, tank tops?
Right now I'm wearing long pants, pink and white striped pajamas, very traditional-looking pajamas.
So now how do you start your writing process in terms of your ideas? Do you have to go out and be by yourself? Do you have a special room? Do you listen to a certain kind of music?
All of those things help. I have an office, but it's weird. My office in the last couple of years has really become more about business, you know, the promotion and the publishing side and all of that. So even though I can write in my office, what I typically do is when my husband is not around, I write in the kitchen or I take my laptop out on the porch or to a coffee shop or something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I listen to a little music to just distract my mind from, you know, paying bills and, you know, all the little to-do list stuff.
Right, just get stuff out of your head, kind of release a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, and sometimes just to kind of perk you up because even at this stage of the game, you know, having published some books and having had some success, there's still days where I sit down and it's like, God, can I do this? You know, this is so hard and how am I going to figure this out? And so I'll listen to a gospel or, you know, hip-hop or whatever it is, but something that will – kind of uplift me and remind me, I can do this.
Let me read a little bit from your book, Orange, the Mint, and the Honey. Actually, it's near the end of the book. It says, I closed my eyes and inhaled. The mint smelled like a just sliced orange, but not as strong. It was a more relaxing kind of scent. I put a leaf in my mouth. The taste was a mixture of orange peel and grass, and it made me smile. When I opened my eyes, she was grinning at me, happy to see somebody else could appreciate her problem child. Come back with a shovel and take as much as you want, she told me, but I warn you, you'll never be able to control it. This is from one of your main characters in Orange, Mint, and Honey, and just this description, like I said, the writing just makes me feel like I was in the scene. I'm tasting, you know, this leaf. I'm experiencing what's going on. One of the issues you dealt with in the book also was, I guess people being torn and abandonment issues. The mother in the book left the child for a week. Where did that idea come from? Did you know somebody? Or did you talk to somebody at an AA meeting, or you just thought about that? How did you come up with that idea for such abandonment?
You know, I can't even remember anymore how that part of the story came to me, but it wasn't, you know, I didn't talk to anybody and get it from anybody. But I remember growing up, One time we lived in an apartment complex and there were a couple of kids that I never saw their parents around. And one time I went over there and they were eating soup, quote unquote soup, that was hot water and ketchup.
Oh my God.
You know, and so I think it happens where parents kind of disappear for however, you know, whether or not they come home every day or not, you know, neglect is pretty common. But I think the idea came in this particular story because I wanted an issue where the mother had really done something that was heartbreaking and something that was really concrete. And as I was writing, it just was one of those things that came to me that said, wow, she had left this child.
For a week, yeah. I mean, it's a very severe issue, child neglect in the country. People don't think about it. They think about, like, kids getting hit, kids getting beaten. In your story, the kid's not getting hit or beaten. Nobody raped her. I mean, there was a close incident where she thought something might happen. But the issue of neglect, people sometimes ignore. And like you said, when you were younger, you saw kids, maybe not their parents weren't around a lot, maybe they're latchkey kids. But that's something that we need to be aware of in our communities is that children being left alone, and that's when children get into trouble. They don't have anything to do. They get pulled into the wrong crowd, you know, so it's something we need to be aware about. Talk about your new book that you're working on now.
Well, I'm actually working on two different books right now. The one you mentioned, Calling Every Good Wish Home, is a book about a woman who is engaged. She's in her late 30s, and she's on sort of the cusp of taking a step in her life when her estranged father passes away, and she meets his widow, who is the woman that he left her mother for.
Mm.
And they become close, and it's about, again, actions and choices that people made in the past and how it affects the present, and how getting to know what was the real story versus what she heard impacts how she makes choices in her life today.
I just want to let the readers know, again, her website is CarleneBryce.com, and I see you have your events listed up here. You're going to be in California in June?
Yeah, for the Mixed Roots Film and Literary Festival. I'll be talking about Children of the Waters because that book deals with mixed race issues in addition to two women who find out they're sisters.
Yeah, now that's mixed race. I have some friends who are mixed race, and I'm very light-skinned one myself. A lot of times people think I'm mixed, but I'm not. Probably somewhere in the background I am, but both of my parents are African-American. But I know that when I was younger, my friends who were mixed, they struggle a lot between, you know, choosing sides, like, am I black, am I white? Some people, there was a young lady I knew, she was Asian and black, and there's a struggle. Look at our president now. He checked black on the census. What do you think about that?
I think it's an interesting generational thing. I am not mixed race myself, but like you, you know, sometimes people assume that, but I'm not. But I have nieces and nephews who are, cousins who are, lots of different relatives who are. And one of the things I see is that people my age, I'm in my 40s, people my age tend to feel more like they had to choose. Whereas younger people, I think, are now feeling more like it's not
a
choice.
Big deal.
They can be both.
Yeah.
My niece can be Latina and black, and
mm-hmm.
or, you know, black and white, and be all that they are. So I think it's interesting generationally. I think, you know, Obama is of my generation and probably felt like he had to choose. I mean, in his autobiography, he talks a lot about that and how he came to that choice, and I think it's very valid. I'm not one of those people who says, you know, puts him down for having chosen black.
Right, one side.
That's
yeah.
his choice, and he feels good about it. That's who he is.
Well, I think it's, yeah, I mean, that's, I think it's his choice, too. I remember, at first I was a little saddened in a sense. Like, I felt like, is he not proud of the other side, or, you know, what was behind that? And maybe nothing was behind it, and that's just who he is, you know? So just my issues, you know, with the whole, is him not choosing both or whatever. But one of the things, too, in Children of the Waters, you mentioned about the adoption. And there are a lot of children out there that need to be adopted, and they're stuck in the system. Did you research anything about adoption for that? Or, again, you just were sitting with yourself and coming up with the ideas?
Well, actually, the story for Children of the Waters was based on a real story that happened to one of my now former sisters-in-law. She's biracial, and in real life, when she was a baby, her mother, who was single, and her grandparents put her up for adoption, and one of the reasons that they gave her up was that her father was black.
Mm.
And in real life, she was adopted by a white family and met her birth sister, who is also white, so race really wasn't an issue because she had been raised already with white people. But in my story, I thought, well, what if that baby who had been given up had been adopted by a black family and had
mm-hmm.
been considered a black woman her whole life, and then finds out she's got this white side to herself? What would happen?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
really where that came from. But I did also research a lot about people who are adopted and people who have put children up for adoption, and went to an adoptee support group and interviewed some people and stuff like that. So, yeah, I did research for that.
What are some of your authors that you like? What do you like to read when you're not working on your own books?
Well, I would say one of my favorite authors, of course, is B.B. Moore Campbell. But some of the stuff I'm reading lately that's new, I like to talk about new stuff that maybe people haven't heard of. One of my most favorite recent books is a book called Before I Forget by Leonard Pitts Jr.
Okay.
And it was a really, really beautiful novel that was very much like Orange Mint and Honey, only it was fathers and sons and generation, three generations, a young man, a middle-aged man, and then an older man, and their relationships. And it was really, really great. I just read an early copy of a book called 32 Candles that's coming out this summer by Ernessa T. Carter that is a great book. It's a really funny...
You said 32 candles?
32 candles. Remember that
okay,
movie, 16 candles?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is about a woman who's 32 and sort of having, you know, finding her place in the world at 32, and it's just was a really great book. Bernice McFadden has a new book out called Glorious that is just a beautiful historical novel. It takes place partly in the Harlem Renaissance. Let's see.
Are you talking about these also on your blogs? Can people? I'm writing some stuff in the
chat
room, and so people could go to your blog. And again, let me just mention some of your blogs. First of all, you have your website, CarleneBryce.com. Then WelcomeWhiteFolks.blogspot.com, and then also PajamaGardener.blogspot.com. So she has two on blogspot.com, Welcome White Folks and Pajama Gardener. So definitely check those out. I put them in the chat room. They're on my website. And for me, it's wonderful because I love to read. In my house, I have like four or five bookshelves. I have books on the floor. Unfortunately, I probably need to buy another book shelf to put them on. And I've tried to stop from buying books and go to the library to save some money. Yeah, but it's important to support artists. I'm an artist, and I think it's important to support. So definitely go out and buy some of Carlene's books, Children of the Waters, Orange Mint and Honey. Check out her Lifetime movie, Sins of the Mother. You can go to Lifetime's website. That's also something I put in the chat room, a link. You can see the trailer of Sins of the Mother. The link is to YouTube. So please go out and don't just go to the library. Go buy her books so that she can, you know, continue to write more books and have time and space to write. Because it takes time to write a book. It doesn't just pop out sometimes. I mean, or how do you feel? Do you feel like things just popped out instantaneously for you?
No. I think that's one of the challenges right now is that publishers really want authors who can churn out books. And some people are good at that and are really fast writers. And other people aren't, so it really makes it a challenge to try to get a book out every year or two. For me, it's a challenge. I think I prefer to have a little bit more time to really get to know the characters
mm-hmm.
and their world that they're living in and stuff. But
does your husband help you at all with musical choices that you have in your stories?
You know how he helps me is being an artist too. It is a really good relationship to be with somebody who understands the creative process and understands, you know, the ups and downs, the highs, the lows, who understands I need my space where it looks like I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting staring off in the space, but that's because something is, you know, marinating around in my brain.
Mm-hmm,
so
that
helps. And also he's really disciplined and he's a bass player and he practices and spends a lot of time in his studio, and that helps me keep disciplined with my work too.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell the audience also that you wrote Lead Me Home, An African American's Guide Through the Grief Journey, and edited the anthology Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, Black Women Explore Midlife. And then you also have your book, Walk Tall, Affirmations for People of Color, which sold over 100,000 copies. So hopefully today people will purchase some more copies of your book. The grief journey, now that's an interesting thing. Sometimes people think about grief only when people die, but sometimes you lose maybe your job or your ability to do something. That's a grief process also. Tell me about that book a little bit.
Yeah, that book I wrote after my mother passed away. But one of the things that it does deal with is that there are many different kinds of losses, and I think one of the losses people are really dealing with a lot right now is, you know, job loss and
mm-hmm.
financial
mm-hmm.
security and stuff like that. So And those are losses, and it is sometimes like a death. If you go through a divorce, for example, it can feel like a death.
A death of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so check out her book. Check out her book about grieving, but check out her book about some other happy things, reunification. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on this morning. I love your writing. I wish you all the best with your future projects. Hopefully you can come back on and talk about your new books when they come out. And I want to thank the listeners this morning. You can follow me on twitter.com/joykeys. You can also become a fan of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys on Facebook. You can also download the show from iTunes. So please tune in next Saturday. And we're going to be talking with another great author, Susan J. Douglas, and an actor and a musician. She's a black volleyball player, but she's also a musician. So tune in next Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern for those two great shows. And Carlene, again, thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. I can't believe it went by so fast.
yeah, it does. But again, audience, remember, CarleneBryce.com. Check her out. Buy her books. Support her so she can continue her great writing. And check out her two, Pajama Gardener, blogspot.com, and Welcome White Folks, blogspot.com. Everybody have a wonderful Saturday and productive Saturday, and tune in next Saturday to hear me here at Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Thank you so much again, Carlene.
Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.